Welcome back to Shatteringness. It's my pleasure to have one of the most courageous and most brilliant individuals on in the world today. IQ Al-Rasooli is our guest. IQ is the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam, one of the few sane voices on the most troubling subject, the most deadly and destructive subject in the world today, which is the religion of Islam. IQ, how are you today?
I'm fine, sir. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I received an email from a mutual friend of ours that claimed that the Center for Security Policy, it's an organization that I was not familiar with, released a poll that said that 51% of Muslims living in the United States wanted to live under Sharia law. And so the first thing I did, IQ, is Google the Center for Security Policy to see if they were a legitimate organization. They are. And then the next thing I did is I wanted to know if, in fact, they have the results of such a poll on their website and how many Muslims they contacted. You know, the number is, according to the nationwide survey of 600 Muslims living in the United States, they found that 51% wanted to live under Sharia.
It was yesterday, I watched Hannity. Hannity sent a black guy, American, to interview Muslims. The majority of them living in America, American citizens, said also they would prefer Sharia. And that was only yesterday.
So this is half of the Muslims in America, rather than assimilating in America and enjoying the benefits that come along with a constitution that is established really on the basis of Yahweh's, the 10 statements that Yahweh etched in stone. I mean, it's very, very Torah-based. That rather than living under a constitution granting freedoms and rights, that they would prefer to live under the most savage, the most destructive, the most demented, the most deadly doctrine ever uttered in the name of God, Sharia.
Yada, if I took this questions to these people, and I would pick the right people, because I know what they look like, 89% would have said yes.
Yeah. What you would have done is you would have addressed the question to good Muslims. You would have addressed the question to those who are not pretending to be Muslim. A lot of people are born in an Islamic country. They were born into a family that claimed to be Islamic. They don't go to a mosque. They don't read the Quran. They don't have a clue who Muhammad was. They're only Muslims by pretense, and the Quran actually defines them as non-Muslims. So if you were to query good Muslims, it'd be 100%, wouldn't it?
In any mosque, I will get 100%.
Yeah.
In any mosque, with Europe or America, I will get 100%, not 99%.
Now, let's talk about Sharia law so that our listeners have an idea of its basis. Sharia law is based entirely on the words and deeds of a singular individual. Is that true?
Yes, Muhammad bin Abdullah.
Right. So, strictly on Muhammad's words and deeds. That's the entirety of Sharia law. And we'll find Muhammad's words and deeds in only two places. Is that also true, correct?
Quran and Hadith, or Sunnah.
Right. So, and in fact, the Quran and Hadith collectively are Sunnah. And as a matter of fact, the Quran is Hadith. It's an oral report from Muhammad and his companions. So, within the Hadith, including the Quran, how is Muhammad depicted?
Well, realistically, as the most despicable creature that ever walked the face of this earth.
So a legal system, a governmental system, based upon his words and deeds, would be grotesque, perverted, deadly, destructive, immoral, counterproductive. Is that all true?
Yes, plus demonic, satanic.
Yeah. There's a reason for that, and that is that right. Muhammad admitted at the beginning and at the end of his 22 years in his scramble for fame, sex, power, and money that he was demon-possessed. His first experience with the spiritual world, it was so frightful, so horrific, that he tried to commit suicide. And he admitted to his wife that he was demon-possessed, and in his farewell sermon, he told us that jinn, which were the Arabic depiction of demons, were permanently attached to him and influenced him. As a matter of fact, he even said that all of Allah's messengers speak on behalf of Satan.
Yep.
That's all in the Quran.
In the Quran.
Yeah.
Every single one item you just spoke about,
yeah,
he wrote in his autobiography, which is the Quran.
Correct. And so you've got a legal system in Sharia law that is based on Muhammad's example. Was Muhammad a pedophile?
Well, if Muhammad's example is anything as an example, mm-hmm, no wonder you see all Muslims are depraved.
Yeah.
Every single one of them.
Do you hear the stories that have come out of Afghanistan recently and the prevalence of bachabazi, the boy play, where little boys are gathered up from the communities, and the army and police that America has empowered, that the leaders of the Afghani army and police are chaining them to beds and then gang raping them for months on end?
Yeah. But yeah, this has been going on for 1,400 years of Islam.
You know that
the
Ayatollah Khomeini wrote a book called his Little Green Book, where he devoted about a third of the book to telling Muslims how to have sex with children?
Correct. Correct. At any age, by the way. At any age.
Another third of the book. Oh, by the way, yeah, all the way down to 2 years old. And you know that another third of his book telling Shiite Muslims how to have sex with goats?
Well, animals.
Yeah, animals in general, but the preferred animal, I guess, because they're cute and furry, is a goat.
This is the Islam. This is Islam. This is Islam. It can't change. It's impossible.
Right.
And yet, as we speak today, 8,000 illegal Muslims are invading Europe,
mm-hmm,
and they are accepting them with open arms.
Yeah.
They're committing cultural suicide, right, national suicide, with their eyes open.
Yeah, there's 20 million of them queued up to infiltrate Europe and the United States, bringing this disease of Sharia, which is a perspective, a legal system, a religion and politics based on the most demented, deadly, demonic and perverted man who ever lived. And there is nothing on this planet, and there's a lot of things I don't like on this planet, but there is nothing on this planet as depraved as Sharia, because it's based on Muhammad's life. Muhammad, when he was 53, he had sex with a 9-year-old girl. In fact, when he was 50, he started having sex with this girl in her parents' bed when she was 6 years old.
Yes, he fired her.
Yes. And then he had a harem filled with little children, all of whom were sex slaves. Every time that he would rob terrorize a Jewish community, he would kill the men, enslave the children, and then not only rape the women, but he got the first pick. And the names of the women have been handed down to us through the hadith that Muhammad raped.
Correct, but he also raped and enslaved other pagan Arabian tribes, not even Jews and Christians.
Correct.
He did not discriminate. He was an equal opportunity rapist.
Now, if a woman has no rights, if a man has absolute control over a woman, so that she is essentially his slave, every time he has sex with her, it's rape, isn't it?
Of course it is, yes.
And the Quran says that it's acceptable for Muslims to have sex with their slaves, doesn't it?
100%.
Yes, and so because in Islam, women are the property of men, there is nothing but rape in Islam. Every act of sex in Islam is rape.
That's why we have 750 million women, 750 million human beings who are treated as sex slaves.
And by the way, you can't have any compassion for them.
Well, there is no compassion in Israel.
No. Well, I know, but we even can't have any compassion for the 750 women who were treated as property by Muslim men, because they are the biggest promoters of the horrific treatment that they receive, and they impose it on their own daughters.
Correct. They do that.
Do you know, when a woman goes to Saudi Arabia, when a non-Muslim woman goes to Saudi Arabia to work as a servant in one of the royal family's households, you know, the first thing they do is they take away her passport. Then they renege on everything that was in the original contract, and she becomes a slave. And you know who tortures them the worst? Who burns cigarette butts into them, who carve them, pulls out their fingernails, who mutilate them? It's the women.
The women of Islam.
Right. And they do it because that's how they're treated, and they somehow get this sense of, well, if I'm going to be treated that way, I'm going to take it out on someone else. And they do it. You can't feel any pity for them.
As we speak, they arrested in Los Angeles a 28-year-old Saudi prince for doing exactly that.
Yeah.
It's today. It's in the news.
Yeah. That is who they are. That's because that's who Muhammad was. You've got a religion that is based on the most despicable man who ever lived. And Sharia law is the embodiment of Muhammad's perverse behavior. He was a terrorist. He was a rapist. He was a mass murderer. He was sadistic. He was a thief. Engaged in kidnap and ransom and rape.
As we agreed, he was the head of the first organized crime syndicate in human history, and Islam continues to be a crime syndicate.
So here in America, 51% of all Muslims living in America as American citizens want to be governed by the most sadistic, demonic, deadly, and destructive doctrine ever conceived by man. And yet Europe and America are going to take in millions more, maybe tens of millions more?
Yes. But the 51%, as I said before, it was totally random and not fair. Because had he gone to a mosque or two mosques or three mosques, he would have had 98%.
Correct. If he'd read the Quran, he'd have had 100% compliance. If he'd read the Hadith, he'd have 100% compliance. No. Folks, you've got to wake up to this. Sharia law is the most perverted, the most deadly, the most destructive idea ever perpetrated under any circumstances, religious or political. It speaks to how stupid most people are. Stupid. What other word could you use to describe a nation or a continent willing to accept people who cling to the most depraved, the most deadly and destructive doctrine ever promoted by humans?
I can't answer that. I really can't. The only sane person today on the continent of Europe is Prime Minister Orbán of Hungary. He's the only one.
Yeah.
He's the only one.
Although the Czechoslovak, I think it was, no, it wasn't, it was, wasn't Czechoslovakia, it was, or the Slovakia, one of the derivatives, Slovakia, one of the derivatives of Czechoslovakia. He recently, 2 days ago, called the Merkel's plan to divvy up millions of Muslims between European countries insane. He says, no, I'm not going to agree to it. I think it's stupid. What a ridiculous idea. It's counterproductive. No. And so Francois Mitterrand came out and said, or Holliday, actually, Holliday came out to France and said, what we have to do as a continent is recognize that those who don't share our values are not welcome here. And he was talking to the Slovakian people, saying that, okay, that Slovakia should disassociate from the European Union, not recognizing that none of the millions of people that he was trying to allow to flood into Europe, none of them share European values.
Not a single one. By the way, when we were talking about the 51% in America,
yes,
under Sharia, not a single Muslim anywhere in the world, whether it's America or Europe, can ever be loyal to the Constitution of the Europeans or the Americans.
Of course not.
Nor can they ever be loyal to the people of America who are not Muslim. Or the people of Europe who are not Muslim. It's 100%, not 51%, not 98%, it's 100%.
And you don't even need Sharia. The Quran says that there is no choice for Muslims.
Absolutely.
That Allah has chosen their religion, that Allah has chosen their governance, and that theirs is to simply submit and obey. No choice. It is impossible, according to the Quran, for a Muslim to support a democratic government. Impossible.
Yes.
It is strictly under Islamic dictators that they must live. They must have no freedom of religion. There must be no freedom of religion for anyone else, and there must be no choice in government, thus no democracy.
So now what we have is a two-tier stupidity. First, the Europeans for allowing the Muslims in, and second, for the Muslims who are running away from Sharia to go to the West, to bring Sharia to the West.
Right. Yeah, it's double stupid. I mean, how stupid would you have to be? In fact, I want to just ask how stupid you have to be. There were 717 Muslims that were trampled to death throwing stones at the devil as part of the Hajj. How stupid would you have to be to trample on foot 717 people to death? Wouldn't somebody along the way say, hey, we're walking over people, we're killing them, maybe we should stop this? How stupid do you have to be? How much did your mind have to be absolutely warped before you wouldn't have somebody say, you know, stampeding one person to death is unacceptable, but 717 with your feet?
Well, in a way, it was Satan's revenge upon the people who were throwing stones at him.
Oh, of course, because they're actually not, because what they're doing, and that's the whole trick of Islam. And it's Satan's best trick. Satan uses the same trick, by the way, in the Christian New Testament. What Satan does is Satan hates the title Satan. Satan means adversary. Hasatan is the adversary in Hebrew. And so he hates the adversary title. Yahweh tells us he wants to be considered God. He wants to be worshipped as if he were God. So it is befitting for Satan to have people throw stones at the adversary title while worshiping him as if he were God under the title Allah.
Correct.
So he's playing them for fools, but he has no respect for those who buy into his stupid scheme.
One of the items you mentioned, I would like to repeat here. Our listeners should be made aware that the historical records by the Arabs prove that almost each and every so-called Islamic ceremonies performed today, and in the last 1400 years, since Muhammad's death, are of pagan Arabian origin.
Right.
Which Muhammad incorporated off the shelf, so to speak, into the cult of belief system.
And that was the next point I wanted just to make.
What you see on television is literally Arabia of 1400 years ago.
Correct. We will return, and we're going to talk about the Kaaba, the Hajj, the circumambulation, the prostration, prayer. We're going to talk about even the God's name and the black stone when we return. IQ. The Muslims have been seduced into believing that their God is represented by a black stone. Did the black stone represent a pagan god before Muhammad called that god the only god?
Yes, al-Hajar al-Aswad, the black stone, that's exactly what it means.
Right.
It's in Arabic. Mm-hmm. And it's the name given to a meteorite embedded in the corner wall of the Kaaba.
Right.
It was venerated by the pagan Arabs centuries before Muhammad, and it's become now the prime center of veneration of Islam.
Yeah. Now, that black stone that may or may not be a meteorite, but it's nonetheless, it's a rock. Was it the lone rock of a monotheistic religion, or was the Kaaba a rock pile devoted to rock gods, of which the Allah rock was just one of 300 plus rocks?
360, according to Muhammad, yes. All rocks.
all rocks. So it was a rock pile. This was such a primitive society that rather than carving their gods into sculptures and the image of men, like everyone else did around them, like the Babylonians and the Assyrians and the Egyptians and the Greeks and the Romans, the best they could do was a pile of rocks.
Literally, they had no art. They had no concept of art. They didn't have the tools to make art.
In fact, the Kaaba wasn't even a shrine. The Kaaba was really just a pile of rocks.
Absolutely. It had no roof.
Right. Wasn't even a building. Wasn't even a building.
I mean, a human being.
Right. And Mecca was a collection of mud huts. In the middle of Mecca was a rock pile. The rock pile was known as the Kaaba. Allah was one of 360 rock gods venerated in this rock pile.
Yeah.
And so you would go, you're going to be stupid enough to spend your time and money to go on a Hajj pilgrimage, which was also part of pagan Arabia, to circumambulate around a rock? I mean, how stupid do you have to be?
Circumambulation was also pagan.
Right. Part of it. That was what they did in Mecca. That's how Mecca made its living, is that they would provide services to the pagan Arabs on migration with their camels and caravans, and you got the food and water concession was how they made their money when people prostrated themselves to, circumambulated the rock pile known as the Kaaba.
By the way, the Kaaba was not worshipped by the idolaters. They were not worshipping it.
No.
It just contained the idols of worship. That's all.
Right. That's right. Yes. And the idols were rocks.
All of them were rocks, except the ones that they imported later on from Syria.
Yeah, I think there were a few that they had a naked woman in there that was of great controversy. But yes, there were some that they imported because they obviously were incapable of carving them. Now, the Hajj itself, pagan Arabian, the Kaaba, pagan Arabian, Allah, pagan Arabian, the circumambulation, pagan Arabian, the prostration prayer, wasn't that also pagan Arabian?
No, they never prostrated. That was Muhammad who created it.
Oh, so bowing down to rock piles and to rock gods.
Yeah,
because guess what Satan wants?
By the way, the kissing of the black stone.
Mm-hmm.
Muhammad started it.
Okay.
The pagan Arabians never kissed the black stone.
Okay.
And who proves this point? Umar ibn al-Khattab, in one of the hadiths, says, I'm talking to this black stone. He was talking to the black stone. He said, I know you are only a stone, that you are no good and not bad. But had it not been that Muhammad kissed you, I wouldn't have kissed you, and he kissed it.
Yeah.
It's in the tradition. It's in the hadith.
Yeah. And let me just do a little thought game here with you. Would you have any interest in worshiping a God that created you for the purpose of worshiping him?
No.
That would be, God would be insecure, would be really sadistic. Can you imagine? Let's just say, IQ, that you are super creative. Would you want to create a robot that would spend 24/7 telling you how wonderful you are?
No.
Wouldn't that just be repulsive?
Repulsive, yes, definitely repulsive. But it can't be a god with this type of disposition.
Right. Can't be. It's impossible. And so this idea that God wants you to bow down to him and worship him is just disgusting. It's so moronic. It's a wonder that the majority of the world's people are religious. The whole idea is preposterous.
Well, Yahweh never said, bow to me. He
never once.
He never said, worship me.
Right.
He never said, worship me. He never said that.
Right. He never once asked us to pray to him, never once asked us to worship him, never once asked us to bow down to him. And every time anybody in his presence does any of those things, he says, stand up. Stand up. Come on. You know, his whole purpose is to lift us up. He's capable of doing that. So we can stand with him. The idea of a God that would have you bow down and worship him is repulsive.
In Islam. Muhammad always said, we are slave of Allah. If somebody is a slave, he cannot love his superior. He can't. It's impossible.
It's impossible. Correct.
Yes.
Because you have no choice. And love requires choice. It requires free will. In Islam, there is no free will.
None. Zero.
And so, Islam is literally the residue of all of Satan's desires. which is just hilarious that these 717 people were killed throwing pebbles at Satan when their very God is Satan.
Yeah, we can laugh at it.
Oh, you have to laugh at it. I mean, people are so stupid, what are you going to do? You can't help them.
Not many people understand it the way we understand it. That's the whole tragedy.
Right. Yeah, I know. But it is hilarious that people can be so easily fooled that they would trample 717 people to death while on behalf of Satan throwing stones at the title that Satan despises, the adversary. Or they can believe that the Quran is an Arabic book when Quran is a Hebrew word and Satan is a Hebrew word.
By the way, every single item that they use in the religion, in the belief system of Islam,
right. Is
based on the Hebrew. Sadaqah never existed in the Arabic language.
Right.
Zakat, not in the Arabic. By the way, Hajj is from Hagim. It is from the Hebrew language also.
Right.
Every single item in the Quran is
from
the Arabic language. That is pertaining to religious belief comes off the shelf from the Hebrew language.
Right. And by the way, there is no word for religion, though, in Hebrew, because God despises religion. And there is no word for obey in Hebrew. So there are some Arabic words that are mixed in because Yahweh doesn't have such words in his palate because he does not want to be obeyed, does not want to have people worship him, bow down to him, prostrate. All of those things, those they borrow from other places because God has no use. You know what's so amazing, though, is that the Quran says that Allah is the God of the Torah, but the character, the relationship that Yahweh has with his creation is the antithesis of Allah. They're absolute opposites.
The Quran is the exact opposite of every one of the Ten Commandments.
Correct. It is.
Every single one of them.
Yeah, how about this one? My name is Yahweh. I am Yahweh, your God. You shall not exist with another God in my presence.
Yes.
How about just the first one?
A God called Allah.
Right, and then didn't he also, that first statement says that I, Yahweh, your God, led you away from slavery? And yet, what does Islam mean? Slavery?
Slavery. Submission, yes.
Right. So, in Islam, people are being led into slavery. With Yahweh, they're being led away from slavery, which means they're liberated.
That's why Islam is incompatible with the American Constitution.
Right.
It is incompatible with Judeo-Christianity. Impossible. They can't.
Right.
They can't coexist.
Sharia law is actually a law codifying a criminal crime syndicate. So it encourages rape, pedophilia. It encourages all manner of stealing, of lying, of enslaving. And so, if you have a doctrine that encourages that which is illegal in any moral, civil nation, it shouldn't be allowed.
But Yada, it doesn't encourage; it sanctifies it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. In fact, terrorism isn't encouraged in Islam. It is sanctified in Islam.
By Allah.
Right. And Muhammad.
Yes. It's sanctified. They give it a godly background. Sanctified by Allah. So there is nothing to argue about.
Right.
You can't have compassion and mercy towards the unbelievers since it's sanctified by Allah. It's done. It's finished.
Right. Oh, and the Quran doesn't give you any wiggle room on jihad. The Quran makes it extraordinarily clear and irrefutable that jihad is a fight to the death. It's using all weapons of war to attack anyone who does not surrender and submit to this despicable wannabe deity in Allah. It's deadly. Jihad is murder, mass murder, according to the Quran.
This is why neither you nor I will ever have a public debate, primetime television with a Muslim.
Correct.
Ever.
They can't, because they cannot contradict their Quran, and they can't refute us without contradicting their Quran. Because we're citing the Quran.
Yes.
I mean, the best way to refute Islam is to cite the Quran.
Absolutely. And the cheapest way.
Yes.
And the easiest way.
Right.
Because only you need the first 9 chapters. You don't need 114 chapters.
You want to destroy Islam? cite the words and deeds of Muhammad as they're recorded in the Hadith.
Correct.
That's all you have to do. You want to absolutely destroy Islam, you don't need any other source than the sources that
Hadith.
That are derived directly from Muhammad. Muhammad is the best weapon against Muhammad.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is why your book, Prophet of Doom, seals Islam to death.
Right. 1,000 times over. Because it only uses one source, the Hadith, which includes the Quran. And it simply cites Muhammad's words and deeds and uses Muhammad's words and deeds against Muhammad and his religion, Islam.
Hence, it's irrefutable. Completely, utterly irrefutable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing, too. You know, I was passing a bumper sticker by a couple of Muslims the other day here in Ohio, and it said, Jesus is in the Quran.
Yeah.
So, well, first of all, he's not. It's Esau that's in the Quran, and Esau is a transliteration of Esau, which is the person that Yahweh says, I hate him, because he went off and engaged in Ishmael's religion. So there is no Jesus in the Quran. And by the way, in the Quran, since Arabic is written using Hebrew letters, you could properly say Yahusha, couldn't you?
Correct.
But they don't. So there is no Jesus in the Quran, idiot. We have Kirk with us, and he has a question. I spent the first hour with Kirk this morning. Hello, Kirk. We've got IQ with us.
Good morning,
yes.
Ian. Good morning, IQ.
Good morning, IQ.
Thank you. How long, with the influx of all the refugees to Europe and also to the United States, how long before they settle in and feel comfortable enough to start really creating havoc?
10 years.
10 years?
Yeah, that's my timeline, too. Yeah, it's my timeline.
At the rate they're going, maximum 10 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be like birth pangs up to the 10 years.
A little bit, and then bigger.
Gradually increasing so that you'll see more and more terrorist acts perpetrated by these Muslims, and they're going to grow in propensity. My guess is, IQ, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, I think that over the next couple of years, so that the floodgates stay open, you're going to see a de minimis amount. But that 3 years from now, 4, 5, 6, all the way to 10 years from now, it's going to increase to the point that 10 years from now, Europe is in complete anarchy as a result.
There's no question. Yes. I mean, in my mind, maximum 10 years. That's it. Done.
Right. Wow. And you know what they're going to do, Kirk? Yeah. What they're going to do is to say, because of this civil disobedience and because we can't speak out against Islam, what they're going to do is they're going to impose authoritarian rule. The Muslims are going to get exactly what they want by being Muslims. They're going to get a dictator.
That's the only thing that can keep them in control.
That is the only thing that can keep a lid on this horrible disease is a dictator.
How sad for all of us.
Yes, like your country.
It's sad for everybody in the world, believe me.
Yeah, yeah. It's like your country.
If America go down, there is nothing left.
Yeah. If you come from Iraq. Was Saddam Hussein a good guy or a bad guy?
If I look at ISIS and look at Saddam Hussein is definitely preferable.
Oh, of course. But the fact is, okay, Saddam Hussein was not a good guy, but he's infinitely preferable to either the Iranian-controlled government of Iraq or the Islamic State, correct?
Because he was secular.
Yes.
He allowed Christians, Jews, Buddhists, Hindus, anybody, as long as they did not interfere with the political system,
right.
They were all right. There's nobody in trouble.
Yeah, it was almost no terrorism in his country.
There was no terrorism. There was no terrorism.
Right, and no Islamic terrorists in Iraq.
I lived there, and even after I left, I have never heard under Saddam Hussein acts of terror.
Right. It's not to say that Saddam Hussein's boys didn't occasionally rape girls. They did. But what we have now is an entire political structure on both sides, religious structure, both on the Sunni and Shia side, where there's mass kidnappings and rapes of tens of thousands of little girls.
Correct.
Yeah.
Justified by Islam.
Right.
Scripture.
Right. So what you've gone is from a bad situation to an infinitely worse situation by Americans' intervention, all of which has led to this mass migrations of Muslims into the United States and Europe. Talk about counterproductive.
America.
Shouldn't we just hang George Bush?
I mean, the French are just as guilty. And now with the stupidity of Merkel, she's even more guilty.
Yes. Yeah, it's, you know, George Bush's invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq certainly precipitated all of this, just as Obama's bombing of Libya did. But, oh my goodness, to have not recognized that that's the cause of the problem, as Merkel is doing, and saying, you know, what the solution is, let's just let millions of them come into Europe and fundamentally change for the worse our civilization.
It's the same. It's impossible. It will be Islamized. It will be like the Ottoman Turks, exactly the same way. The Christians will not exist for long after that.
Well, let's just look at the areas that Islam has total influence. What is the fate of Christians in Iraq now that the secular dictator has been deposed?
From 1.3 million, they lost less than 200,000 now.
Annihilation.
Completely.
What's the fate of Christians in Syria?
Gone. Finished.
Right. What's the fate of Christians in Yemen?
Gone. There is none.
What's the fate of Christians in Turkey?
Oh, Erdogan is taking care of that one.
Yeah. The fact is that, what's the fate right now of Christians, the Copts, in Egypt?
Ah, they are 8 to 10% of the population, and they are the original Egyptian population, mm-hmm. and now they are being literally taken out.
Yeah, exterminated.
Yeah.
So in every place that Islam has influence, there are no Christians.
Correct, but the Pope doesn't agree with you.
Oh,
the
no.
Pope
he
doesn't agree with me.
Yeah, the Pope is sitting here talking about, yeah,
Obama
that...
Obama doesn't agree with me. Right. And the European leaders keep telling us that Islam means peace.
Yeah. I'm going to tear you to pieces is what it means.
Yeah, I know. But they don't know that. You know that. I know that. And our listeners know that.
Yeah, Islam means submission. And, right. In Arabic, Islam means submission. To surrender, to submit, to be a slave.
Yes. To grovel.
Yes, to grovel. Yes, to be humiliated, to be controlled is what Islam means.
We are the slaves of Allah. And every single Khalifa, when he sent a letter, he said, as the slave of Allah.
Right.
How else can you be degraded?
Which is what Abdullah means. You know, how many Muslims have the name of
Abdullah? Being the slave of Allah. That's exactly what it means.
Right. And does Yahweh have any slaves?
None.
No.
Did Moses have any slaves? As far as I know, no.
No. Well, you know, his wife had a Egyptian slave, Hagar, and Yahweh's instructions.
No. I said Moses. I didn't say Abraham.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Abraham. Yeah, Abraham had a slave, and she was. She was liberated.
She was part of the family. He married her.
He did. Although Yahweh said, "No, you know, I want her freed. I want you to send her away with food and provisions. I want her son to also go away with her." And he sent them away because they were to be excluded from the family. But you're right, Moshe, no slaves. The children of Yisrael were slaves. They were liberated by Yahweh. So no, they had no slaves.
Exactly. Jesus did not have any slaves.
Right. By the way, you're familiar with a concept called a yobel, and in the Torah, it's described in the 25th chapter of the book misnamed Leviticus. It's actually Kara. You ever heard of the thing called a yobel?
No.
Dominates the 25th chapter.
I heard the name, but I don't know what it means.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's been corrupted to Jubilee. In the yobel, Yahweh's instructions, and this is the very heart of the Torah. He says that every 50 years, 7 times 7 plus 1, every 50 years, all slaves must be freed. All land must be returned, and all debts must be forgiven. Doesn't sound like Allah to me.
No.
Exactly the opposite point of view. Right?
Yeah.
You know, Yahweh is the God of liberation. Allah is the God of enslavement. They're opposites.
Yeah.
Allah demands being worshipped, and Yahweh hates the notion of worship.
By the way, the Israelites, if I remember correctly, Abraham,
mm-hmm.
the people that he had under him, they were not actual slaves.
No.
They were servants, but not slaves.
Correct.
Huge that difference is, between the two.
Yes, that is absolutely true. Yeah, there is no situation where we find Abraham buying somebody or capturing somebody
absolutely,
and turning
never,
them into a slave.
Never.
Muhammad's idea was you inflict terror on a civilization, a civilian population. You kill the men who can fight back. You enslave the children who cannot, and you rape the women to reward your militants.
Correct. This is Islam in a nutshell.
Yes. Yeah, 100% of the reason that Islam exists was because Muhammad was a lazy man who had no idea how to create or build anything or work for a living, and so he chose to have others steal on his behalf. And even then, he wasn't a Genghis Khan or a Kublai Khan that were robber barons, because even when he went out on one of the terrorist raids, he always hid in the back and covered himself with like four layers of mesh mail, and he would never engage personally. No, he's just a weasel.
No, he was a coward.
Right.
I have a whole chapter on it. Muhammad the coward.
Yeah.
And I prove it, not because I said so. I prove it because the Hadith says so.
When Dawood was faced Goliath, the uncircumcised Philistine, who was heavily armored, a massive man with a huge sword, and David walked up with a slingshot and a stone. Do you think that Dawood was a coward?
How could it be?
Yeah.
He confronted him face to face.
Right. Did him in. You know, with Yahweh, there is no cowardice. There's no reason to be a coward. With Allah, every reason to be a coward.
You have to be a coward. Yes.
Right.
Yes, you have to be a coward. This is exactly why they only attack civilians.
That's right.
Always civilians, unarmed.
Right. And that's not an indictment on what Muslims have become. That's an indictment of what Muhammad did. Every one of Muhammad's 75 terrorist raids, including the first one, was all an armed attack against defenseless civilians. It's Islam.